For days, Bloomington neighbors have been looking up. It's hard to see at first, but a close look reveals Mittens, the cat, stuck in a tree about 70 feet up. Enter Brady. Throughout the week, other tree climbers tried but failed to rescue Mittens. But Brady climbed higher and worked harder.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Brady's my hero.
Terrible.
Kitty, 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 kitty.
Terrible. Terrible.
Kitty, 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 kitty,
terrible.
Well, hello there, Radio Free Brooklyn listeners, and welcome to The World is a Terrible Place, bringing you the very best and the very worst every Monday from 12 to 1 p.m. I'm Arielle Speedwagon.
I am Cassie Wagler.
And we read the news.
So you don't have to. And why would you want to do that? Listen to the news. So boring and sad.
So sad. But so that's sad. What we're here for. We're going to make it easy for you today and every day. Well, this week and every week, I should say.
Exactly.
How are you, Cassie?
I am okay, Arielle. I am okay.
I love that story for you.
I am okay. I had a weekend off from work.
Yes.
And I am okay.
It's amazing what a little weekend off from work will do
love
for a person.
It. Yes. How are you?
I'm a little bit terrible. There's a lot going on, and it all came to a head this morning. Here's the least terrible of all the terrible, I think, is when I was about to get on my bike and ride up here, I realized that once again, my wheel isn't working. My bike's messing up. This was going to be, I don't know, for those of you who've been listening all summer, you've probably heard me bitch about this before, but this was going to be like the beautiful new thing that I had that worked.
The bicycle.
The bicycle. Like, yeah. I was going to spend a little money, relative for me, on a bicycle, and it was going to be perfect, and it was going to work.
And what happened?
It just isn't working. Everything keeps going out of true, and like, just the little things that I think in my head, I was like, but it's new. It's going to live forever, shiny and perfect.
You bought it new from an actual store, like a new store?
I bought it new from a Kickstarter.
Okay.
On the internet.
Okay.
It was disrupting bicycles.
Okay.
And
it should still work.
It should still work. It hasn't even been a year. Yeah. And I'm just feeling the, like, on top of everything else, like, I just like nice things so much. Mm. And it's sad. So, you know, there are a lot of different people with the... And relationships to nice things are so complicated, but I'm one of those people who's just like, I just want a nice thing.
I just want my special thing.
I just want everything to be nice.
Can we talk about the special holidays that are going on right now?
Oh my God, right. There is a special holiday. I was about to say, which ones, Cassie? It's not Halloween yet. But
oh no. Which is the special holidays?
It's the Jewish New Year today.
So fun.
It is so fun, right? It's supposed to be sweet. I went last night with a friend, actually, and we meant to eat some sweet things, but we got full.
So tell me, for those of us who are not participators in Jewish culture and religion, just only sort of spectators. Uh-huh. Tell us a little bit about what Rosh Hashanah is.
Okay, so Rosh Hashanah is the Jewish New Year, which kicks off
Happy New Year.
It kicks off, but it's a little bit less that than it kicks off the Jewish high holidays and the high holiday season, which is rather than the time when we all like get drunk and like high five, which it's, you know, there's a little bit of that. It's a time where we reckon with the whole year that's happened and like the whole year that's to come. So there's Rosh Hashanah where your fate gets. Where you sort of, you weigh the beginning of the year and like your fate gets decided for the next year, traditionally speaking. And then you have 10 days to sort of make right everywhere. And then on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, 10 days later, your fate is sealed as the prayer goes. Although, of course, it's a little more flexible than that, especially in modern Judaism.
So what does the atoning look like? Like now you have 10 days to atone. What is that? What do you do?
It's like you call the people you've wronged and you say, I'm sorry. Can we work this out?
Sorry.
Try and make good with God for all the things you did that are more abstract and wrong.
Right.
You try and figure out what you need to do better. You reflect on these big issues and, you know, and I don't know, people, and there's a lot of like, if I've done anything to wrong you, please tell me on Facebook, which I think is a very complicated
1-800. Oops, you did me wrong.
And there are a couple of people who are I just wonder about being like, you know, actually, I really want to talk about this thing, but I'm not going to do it on Facebook. Like,
no,
you know, I don't know.
Plus, isn't the point sort of for you to like reckon with yourself, not for someone else to tell you what you did wrong?
I kind of think so, but I'm a little, you know, salty old man sometimes.
Gotcha.
I'm like, I'm not gonna. I don't know. If I've decided I don't need to talk about it with you, I'm not going to talk about it so you can have spiritual satisfaction and forgiveness.
Right.
Maybe that's probably un-Jewish. Like, Judaism doesn't really work like that.
Mm.
That's probably my own tradition of morals being corrupted by the Christianity that seeks to engulf us.
Yes,
at all
it is.
Times.
It's very overpowering, I have to agree.
It's true. But thank you for remembering, because clearly
sure.
I am being such a observant Jew that I really genuinely was like, it's too early to talk about Halloween, and the Supreme Court isn't a holiday, and election day is a whole month away. So
right. What's your favorite holiday?
Oh gosh.
Of all the holidays throughout the calendar year.
Oh gosh. I mean, I really like Passover because I get to have a dinner party and we get to like a 3-hour endurance dinner party with talking about big issues.
That's nice.
I really like Halloween and Purim because you get to dress up and have fun. Ooh. I really like all these New Year's because you get to reflect.
Mm.
I really like Valentine's Day because you get to be sweet. I guess I'm not that picky. What about you?
For colors, I like Easter.
Oh, totally, totally, mm-hmm. totally.
For just general costuming, I like Halloween.
Of course.
It's wonderful. I plan very far in advance. I know what I'm wearing. I'm accumulating the things. I shall not say it on the radio.
Okay. I was going to ask, but I won't.
I can't. And then for like the actual celebrating of the day, like Halloween is fun for preparing for, but then the actual like night of it is sometimes like a bust, but the actual like holiday that I enjoy the activities is 4th of July, even though I do not love
you
the
don't,
nation.
You don't need to
but
apologize.
I love drinking beer in the sun.
Yes, so that's a major holiday. Fireworks.
And I don't really care about that, but I like drinking beer in the afternoon, in the sun. Outside.
4th of July is really the apex of drinking beer outside in the sun.
Amen.
Is there are there any special, this is me showing my ignorance, are there like special Mennonite days that like families observe that aren't on a standard Christian calendar?
No, not that I know of. I mean, I wasn't raised Mennonite per se, just my dad, but all holidays are kind of downplayed because, you know, don't revel too much. No revelry.
It's not what we're here for.
Not what we're here for. So holidays, I would say, are not like Sunday, every Sunday. But it's not like, yeah, let's go get nuts. It's like, let's be highly observant and serious.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, we have some highly observant and serious news for you.
Nice today. Transition.
Thanks. Today, all of the, there's some things to make you so sober and somber.
Yes, we got it.
On this beautiful, you know, we don't make the news. We just report it.
We do. We try to extract all the joy from your life.
Exactly. Extract it, reprocess, and give it back to you every week.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Are we ready for the news?
To the headlines.
Let's do it.
Well, this week, in not awesome, but kind of useful news, 7 species of bees in Hawaii have been officially declared endangered.
Sad face.
Sad face. We'll get there. And in case you haven't heard, the bees have been having a problem over the past decade. Here is an interview from CNN with Dr. Chris Connolly, bee expert. A great job if I can ever imagine one.
Dr. Christopher Connolly joins us now to discuss this. Doctor, how great is the threat to the bees of the world? I think it's called colony collapse or something. How bad is it?
Well, currently it's very bad. In the US, they currently lose between 30 and 70% of all honeybee colonies every single year. And when it comes to wild bees, we just don't know. The only measure we really have for wild pollinating insects is the windscreen bug test. This is when the old days, when you drove your car long distances, you had to keep stopping to scrape the bugs off your windscreen. That's not a problem we really have nowadays. So all these insects have disappeared.
That's science for you.
Mm.
The windscreen bug test. But bees have been in trouble for a while, and it's just getting worse. And being put on the endangered list is actually a huge deal. Because on the one hand, it means you're endangered, which is terrible. And there are pretty strict standards for what it is to be endangered. But on the other hand, it allows the government to start taking steps. Both the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, and the Fish and Wildlife Service, which covers animals in the wild, have power now to designate protected landscapes, take steps to stop threats to the bees, all of this. This actually frees up funding to support the bees, including research for solutions to the pests that are getting them, research to create landscapes and habitats to support bee resilience in Hawaii, and also more money to examine the effects of common pesticides on bee colonies. So minus the bees are struggling, plus we can actually finally do something.
A headline appeared in the New York Times this weekend. The remarriage of Edie Windsor, a gay marriage pioneer. Yes, Edie Windsor.
Oh, Edie.
She may know her as the woman who sued the federal government for discrimination after her partner died and she was hit with major federal estate taxes because they were not considered legally married in the United States because of DOMA. You remember DOMA?
Oh, DOMA.
Good old DOMA. Sounds fun. Sounds like donut, but it's not. It's
I would
DOMA.
Rather have a donut than a DOMA.
Me too. Yes. So DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, saying, haha, no, you shall not be married. There's some children playing outside.
There's some children playing. Okay.
It's okay. We love children. And so she sued and it went to the Supreme Court and DOMA was ruled unconstitutional. And this kind of created the stage for the legalization of gay marriage. Gay marriage included. And so if you were ever going to forget that marriage is rooted in contracts and property, this solidifies it to the max. But she remarried to a woman named Judith Kasson. And this woman is a vice president at Wells Fargo Advisor. Mm. Yay, Wells Fargo. What Ooh. Do you think of when you think of Wells Fargo?
You know, I think of the stagecoaches and then yes. I think of, well, they just did they something did terrible, something. Right?
Yes, they did something like, very bad. Terrible. Very bad. Yeah, when I think of them, I do. I went to the official gay pride parade in New York City one time, and there was like a carriage and some horses like trotting down the street. And I was like, oh, that's so beautiful, like a carriage and horses. And then I was like, oh, that's Wells Fargo float. Okay, cool. So anyways, Wells Fargo is in the wedding pages with Edie Windsor. And then it's in another section called the Scandals and Awful Corporations section of the news. And Wells Fargo has indeed been in the news for opening accounts for customers who did not desire to have those said accounts. Over 2 million accounts opened since 2011 without the people on the accounts even knowing that this existed. So that's just like ridiculously illegal. Wells Fargo had tried to push this off on the personal bankers and has actually fired over 5,000 employees in the last few years. And their version of the story is these greedy personal bankers, they were trying to get commission, so they did all these accounts, but don't worry, we fired them. We got it under control. They were rogue personal bankers.
2 million accounts worth of them.
Yes, 2 million rogue accounts. But the employees have come back hard and have said, you have got to be shitting me. Like, this is not what happened. We have been working in a very high-pressure environment, which we have been forced, pressured, just, like, had this, like, hand on us all the time telling us to open more accounts. We had to open more accounts. We had to reach our numbers. Mandatory staying late if you hadn't reached your numbers. People resorted to like calling their friends and family and being like, please just open an account so I can go home. And there's like many stories of this. I know. And then if you search the land of the internet, which is a fun place, you find a bunch of like animated sort of automated voice animations made about working at banks and about this like pressure to perform at banks. And I do not know who made them. They are at once delightful and also they say a lot of like really bro-y douchey things, which I edited out. So this is from 2012. This is a video in that simulates the experience of working at Wells Fargo. You ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to Wells Fargo. What brings you in today?
Hello, I need to cash a check.
Well, you have definitely come to the right place. Do you have an account with Wells Fargo?
No, I do not.
Please have a seat at my desk while I have the teller work on cashing that check for you.
I really do not have a lot of time to talk. I just need to get my check cashed.
Do not worry. This will not take that long.
Fine.
So, where do you currently do your banking?
I bank at SunTrust because they do not jam products down my throat.
Well, let me let you know that since your paycheck is drawn on us, I can offer you the at-work account, which would be free for you.
That is exactly the reason I will not bank here. Where is my cash?
The teller is getting an approval to approve the check, and they need to go into dual control in order to get some cash. Do you own your own home?
I do, but I just want to get the cash from my check.
Great. Well, we can find you the best mortgage rate for your home. What about credit cards?
This will be the third time I have told you that I want my cash.
But what happens when you run out of cash? You will need some available credit. Oh, and what about your home and car insurance?
Are you kidding me? Where is your manager? This is just plain ridiculous.
Man, please do not complain to my manager. They make me do this. All I want to do is provide great service to my customers. But then I have these ridiculous goals, and if I do not meet those goals, they threaten to write me up and fire me.
I am sorry to hear that, but I still want my cash.
It looks like they're almost finished.
So why do you stay here if they treat you so badly?
Great question. I do not know. Welcome.
All right, so that was a very odd series of animated videos from the internet with like computer generated people simulating what it's like to both go into a Wells Fargo and to work at a Wells Fargo. So the company has come back and said, okay, fine, we did do that. We did. Sorry. There's a class action lawsuit against Wells Fargo with people who had these fake accounts opened in their names, and Congress is questioning them, and we will see how this all shakes out. I don't know. The states of California and Illinois have both ended their official relationships with Wells Fargo. So let's hope that they just burn all the banks down.
Burn all the banks.
The end.
All right. So as part of our ongoing coverage of the U.S. and Southeast Asia, which has evidently turned into one of our beats over the past 6 months, Rodrigo Duterte, the president of the Philippines, continues to grab headlines in the region over here in the United States for loudly asserting that it is his country and he's no longer interested in working with the United States. So in the last few months, he's announced that the upcoming joint military exercises that the Philippines Army usually conducts with the United States, that the ones that are just coming up this month will be the last ones. He has called President Obama a son of a bitch, which is...
Wow.
Yeah, which is wow.
Gutsy.
And stated colorfully in no uncertain terms, and in fact as a key part of his election protocol, that he's not going to stop until every drug user in the Philippines is killed. And this has paved the way for extrajudicial killing of drug users. And that has, you're perhaps unsurprised to learn, spiraled a little bit into anyone you don't like who's conveniently probably also a drug addict who deserves to be killed. It's a huge human rights issue. People are up in arms about it and really trying to figure out what to do with this ever accelerating wave of killing. And just to put him in perspective, this is a clip of Duterte comparing himself favorably to, well, a very special man. I'm just going to play this.
Hitler massacred 3 million Jews. Now, there is 3 million, there's a 3 million drug addicts. There are. I'd be happy to slaughter him. At least, if Germany had Hitler, the Philippines would have. But, you know, my victims, I would like to be all criminals to finish the problem of my country.
Wait, what?
That would be him saying that Hitler slaughtered 3 million Jews. There are 3 million drug addicts in the Philippines. Germany had Hitler. The Philippines have me. I would like to solve the problem of drug addiction in my country.
Wow.
Yes. And he has, in fact, after international outcry, retracted this statement on the grounds that he didn't mean to offend the Jews. To the Jewish people's credit, for once, they didn't just say, you hurt our feelings. They said, it's actually not cool to just slaughter other people like right. We were slaughtered. There are some Jews who wouldn't get that far and would just blame it on blah, blah, blah. But so he said, you know, I'm sorry, Jews, you're right. I shouldn't draw this parallel. So in his latest, he's really been actively also courting China and Russia, two of the U.S.'s biggest sort of semi-enemy, outright enemy. We don't like you. You don't like us. There's a big power struggle going on. He's, in fact, chosen to forego his right to assert the Philippines' victory in the South China Sea a couple months ago or in the past month or so. after this huge fight the Philippines took up against China for fishing rights, he's like, actually, you know, maybe we can just talk about it. It's okay. He's scheduled to visit China in mid-October, a huge change in the region, expected to bring a major, major shift in Filipino-Chinese relationships. And the U.S. hates this. We hate it so much. The Philippines have been very, very important to the U.S. in the South Pacific. They were handed over to the U.S. after the Spanish-American War, after that huge shift of island nations. Basically, Spain being like, we're really sorry. Here are these things that aren't really ours to say we're sorry for losing this war, right? And so as Duterte pivots to China, it's sort of stopping the U.S.'s pivot to the South Asia as well, at least particularly if, and it's in some ways kicking off a wave of protests across South Asia around, or sort of the islands of South Asia around what exactly the U.S. is doing with all these goddamn military bases, right?
Right.
It's a big deal. And so Duterte is starting to question military treaties signed that are really key to the U.S.'s position there. And it's also the beginning of the shift. He came to power not that long ago. He remains hugely popular despite all of these extra judicial killings. He has a reputation that may sound familiar. He's a tough-talking, straight-shooting, take-care-of-business guy who's going to get results.
Oh, I don't like those guys.
Oh, yeah. There's, you know, huh, right? So who knows? It's another one of those guys that seem to be very in vogue right now. And also, I say to myself as I'm giving this and as I was praying this, wait a minute, hold the phone. I'm a lefty. And I am right now talking about military positioning in a post-colonial country that the U.S. kind of still has tried to control, right? He was elected democratically. He is wildly popular, although starting to pick up a lot of heat from human rights activists as these killings continue on. He is and those killings are popular. You know, he wants the U.S. out of his country, and we don't like that because we want to be in their country because we want to have a military strength there, and that country makes it easy because the Philippines are closer than we are, right? And so it's a colonial legacy. This is what post-colonial struggle looks like, folks. It looks like suddenly we're actually going to watch /coerced ally/ is it really your ally? If you're like, I'm so glad you're my friend. Thanks for your lunch money. I was really hungry, right? Suddenly now we have a guy saying like, oh, hell no. It'll be very interesting what happens, especially with regards to what happens if that all turns against the United States. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be talking more after this visit to China in a couple of weeks to see exactly what comes out of it.
Wait, give the people a preview of what you're talking about with the visit to China.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I hit it. This is so wonky. I know. So Duterte is going to go to China on a diplomatic visit, which is very rare. China and the Philippines have been very, very contentious historically. And they're like very doing that diplomatic thing of like, we are so happy to have you joining us to talk. And, you know, Duterte is like, we are so happy our friends to the north are willing to discuss these important matters with us of trade and military and safety. Mm-hmm. And then China's like, we welcome you to our place. And then they are all of their friends like go and have vicious negotiations about all the details. But even the opening of the door to this kind of trade and this kind of discussion is a huge shift. You know, the Philippines has really been the cornerstone of on our side, the U.S.'s side. I don't know if that's my side, but it's also my side internationally. And that there he's potentially saying, well, actually, I'm kind of curious what Putin has to say. And I'm kind of curious, like, what I'm going to get from China and the Chinese government is a big deal because it makes room for the power to shift away from the U.S., what it is to be at the end or potential end of an imperial, you know, of an imperial power is actually what this is about.
Very interesting.
Keep
us updated.
I will. And then, you know, well, we'll get to November. All right.
And now to Colombia. On Sunday, which was yesterday, Colombia held a referendum asking voters to decide whether or not to accept a peace agreement between the Colombian government and FARC, which is also known as the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. I would just like to say that a referendum on a Sunday is such a smart idea.
Right.
It's a good idea.
Democracy. Easier when you're not at work.
They did, however, they only had a 38% turnout, and the results were quite surprising, but we will get to that. Let's just back up. a week, 1 week. The president of Colombia has been meeting and trying to negotiate a ceasefire and a peace deal with the leaders of FARC, which are a guerrilla, so-called, quote-unquote, leftist communist group in Colombia. And they reached an agreement, and they signed it just last week. And many people were very happy. We're going to hear this audio here now from an Associated Press video of people in the streets cheering, and you'll hear a guy, and I'll translate it afterwards.
Es un momento
desde el fondo del corazón.
Tan emotivo.
A todos los héroes. It's a very emotional moment. Es el país.
Tengo 50 años y nunca había
para defender la tranquilidad.
Nunca había sentido que podemos avanzar hacia un país más próspero, más tranquilo, un país normal. Y creo que hoy.
So he says, I'm 50 years old, and I never thought that I would see my country become a place more calm, more normal. It's a very emotional moment. So last week, this happened. They signed the agreement. People are, you know, the international consensus is good thing. This is a good thing. And then they hold this referendum saying that we can only, like, solidify this agreement if the people of Colombia approve it. And the people of Colombia did not approve it. So 38% turnout, 50.2% of people voted against the referendum, saying no thanks on this peace deal, and 49.8% voted for. So it was incredibly, incredibly close. And the reason that many people gave for voting against this peace agreement, I mean, this is, you know, this conflict that has gone on and on and on and on and on for decades. But the reason people gave was that they said that the agreement was too lenient on FARC. That was kind of like, So FARC, started in the 1960s, founded on communist principles, and really was founded in response to, like, this violent government repression of political organizing in rural Colombia. But through that time, from then until now, they have mostly been associated with these really high-profile kidnappings, including in 2002 when they kidnapped 13 members of the government, including a candidate for president. So this is, like, what they're known for. And the agreement that they reached in Cuba and signed would have allowed a space in the legislature, national legislature, for FARC to exist as a political party, and then also for them to have more lenient, like, you know, criminal sentences. And they've been doing this, like, tour of, like, apologies around the country, trying to kind of get people on board with this peace agreement. And the peace agreement is not going forward. So
what does anyone know what happens?
So the president says that he's going to keep, like, working towards this in hopes of getting an agreement that the people will feel better about. I will say, though, that, like, if you don't allow for some sort of, like, political participation, you're not actually, like, creating a resolution for a large group of people who support, you know, yeah, FARC. So in any case, let's hope that they do reach some kind of agreement in the near future. The end.
Indeed. And those are our headlines.
That's the headlines. With the election and
exactly.
The vice presidential candidate saw.
Exactly. I'm going to play a little Solange.
Oh, you are?
Can we do one
right
for the break?
Let's do Solange. Are we going to listen to Rise?
Yeah.
This is, we're going to be playing Solange all through the hour. Solange released a beautiful album last Friday. It's absolutely wonderful, called A Seat at the Table. She's been working on it for over 3 years. And this song is called Rise, and it was inspired by protests in Ferguson and Baltimore and is like an ode to the protesters.
Falling your ways so you can crumble. Fall in your ways so you can sleep at night. Fall in your ways so you can wake up and rise. Fall in your ways so you can crumble. Fall in your ways so you can sleep at night. Fall in your ways. walk in your ways, so you won't grow. So you walk in your ways, so you can sleep at night. Walk in your ways, so you will wake up and rise.
And we're back. Hello, you are listening to The World is a Terrible Place here on Radio Free Brooklyn, bringing you the very best and the very worst every Monday from 12 to 1 p.m. I'm Arielle Speedwagon.
And I am Cassie Wagler.
And we read the news.
So you don't have to.
We do our best, at least.
We sure do. We try to give you a break.
Exactly. And hey, if you like what you're listening to, or you like some of the other shows on Radio Free Brooklyn, or hey, you just like giving money to worthy causes, you can go to the Radio Free Brooklyn website at radiofreebrooklyn.com. where you're probably listening to this very show as we speak, and click the donate button and throw a little money our way to support community-driven radio. There are all kinds of shows on this station. There's the news like us. There are sports shows. There's a ton of different music shows, local music, world music, as in music from all over the world. There's someone broadcast their Dungeons and Dragons game every week.
That sounds so good.
It's so good. It's some of the most compelling radio I've heard in a long time, frankly.
It's also a karaoke show.
Exactly. There's a karaoke show, which I think is also phenomenal. There's shows about writing and poetry. It's just a great station. So if you want to throw a little scratch over here, just go online and do that for everybody so that we can keep coming to you. So
next up,
we have the elections. Exactly. You're so talking about the world is a terrible place.
Hello, and today we have news from the vice presidential candidates. Does anyone even know their names? Does anyone know anything about them? Where are they from? We're here to help you out, folks. We're here to give you a little bit of insight into these VPs.
Exactly. They're having their debate tomorrow.
They sure are. And I actually think that I might watch this. I didn't watch the first debate because I don't want to willingly ever listen to that man. Never, 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 never. But I think I'm going to watch tomorrow. Just because.
All right.
But we're going to start with Tim Kaine. Tim Kaine of Virginia, vice presidential candidate on the Democratic ticket. And really, there's only one thing you really need to know about Tim Kaine. That's right. The man plays the harmonica.
Oh, he's good, too.
He's actually kind of good. This is him on the Tonight Show or whatever with Stephen Colbert.
Is this like when Bill Clinton played the sax?
Yes.
Except it's completely different because the harmonica.
I know. It's very like he lists on his Twitter that he is a harmonica and bluegrass enthusiast, among other things.
It's so willfully uncool.
It's kind of uncool. It's but definitely great. Uncool. It's uncool and cool. But I'm just kidding, of course, about this being the only thing. There's more you need to know about Tim Kaine, and it's not so great. Now, Tim Kaine, this is a political situation these days where, our perspective is so out of whack that someone being not against everyone makes you feel that they're maybe really great. So Tim Kaine, at first glance, you're like, okay, pretty okay, I guess. And there was one issue for which I am a little bit meh about Tim Kaine.
You know, when you first ran as lieutenant governor, you were classified as a pro-life Democrat. You're now not a pro-life Democrat. How would you describe your abortion position?
I would say people use labels all the time, but I'm kind of a traditional Catholic. I don't like, personally, I'm opposed to abortion, and personally, I'm opposed to the death penalty.
Okay, personally opposed to abortion, but he says he's largely inclined to keep the law out of women's reproductive decisions. So he's saying from a legal point of view, he is a supporter of Roe v. Wade, but he takes his position that, you know, abortion, he's opposed to abortion because he is a Catholic, which further stigmatizes abortion and sort of classifies it as this so-called necessary evil, which is not my position, and I don't think is actually a position that supports women and supports access. What do you think, Arielle?
Well, I mean, I'm willing to say, like, dear God, thank you for at least keeping the law out of it and having the sense that so many people don't, to say, well, you should have the right to choose. But I'm also always just a little like, you know, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
People have the right to this, and so you don't have to preface it with what you think. Just do what's right.
Yes. Also, in 2009, while serving as governor of Virginia, he signed a bill that allowed for these Choose Life license plates in the state of Virginia, and the money went to a pro-life, quote-unquote, organization. He defended it as a free speech thing, but, you know.
Do we get to have a Choose Abortion one?
I don't know. You should move to Virginia and propose it. So he's, you know, it's like he ran for governor. He said that he was in favor of reducing abortions by fighting teen pregnancy through abstinence focused education.
You gotta be like that.
And then he like later cut off state funding for abstinence only education. So he's not like totally unreasonable about this. He has a good rating with NARAL, etc. But I don't care about his like feelings about abortion at all. So he needs to be quiet. And then we have a more specific issue about this, which is about the Hyde Amendment. Okay, so are you familiar with this? I can let you know. Yeah,
why don't you tell the listeners what the Hyde Amendment is?
Hyde Amendment. So Hyde Amendment basically is an amendment that says that no funds will be used, no government funds will be used to pay for abortion services. And what this really means is that people who get their health care through Medicaid cannot use Medicaid to pay for abortion. So I know when I used to be a volunteer on a Planned Parenthood like hotline back in the day, and people would call in and they'd say how much you know, how much does this cost? And if it was Medicaid, we'd have to say, well, you actually have to pay for this out of, what is your health insurance? Okay, yeah, Medicaid does not cover this, and it can pay for the ultrasound, but not this. So it really is just targeting poor women who are on Medicaid and saying you can't have this service, and you have to pay for it on your own. Here is Hillary Clinton's position on the Hyde Amendment. She is in favor of revoking it, and here she is saying why.
I believe we need to protect access to safe and legal abortion, not just in principle, but in practice. Any right that requires you to take measures to access it is no right at all. Not when patients and providers have to endure harassment and intimidation just to walk into a health center. And not as long as we have laws on the book like the Hyde Amendment, making it harder for low-income women to exercise their full rights.
All right. So she's saying, no, we have to talk about abortion not just as a theoretical right, but as a right in practice. And we can't be specifically targeting poor women who don't have access to traveling and taking off of work and blah, blah, blah. That's not an actual right. If you can't actually do it in practice, then it's not an actual right. And here is what Tim Kaine has to say about the Hyde Amendment.
One more issue, Senator. The Hyde Amendment that bans taxpayer funding for abortion. Mm-hmm. For or against it?
I have been for the Hyde Amendment. I haven't changed my position on that.
You're still for it? You're still for the ban?
I have not changed my position. Not changed my position on that.
Thank you for that clarity.
The end. I just had to pick that one because I think it's hilarious when they can't hear each other and the thing and they just sound silly. So he is in favor of the Hyde Amendment. So he says we should not have federal funds or state funds in any way paying for abortion services. So this is kind of an interesting situation. They are at odds on this issue. However, the Kaine camp has said that Hillary's official platform says that she is that they she wants to repeal the Hyde Amendment. So he says that he like supports Hillary's platform, even though he is against, you know, he's in favor of keeping the Hyde Amendment on a personal level. So that's Tim Kaine. He plays a harmonica and he has not my favorite abortion politics. But there's a worse guy out there.
Oh, is there?
Let's hear about the other side.
Friends, I bring you Mike Pence.
Oh, God, I'm scared.
Mike Pence, Donald Trump's running mate, has no charming hobbies like playing the harmonica.
None.
The current governor of Indiana. You may remember Mike Pence as the guy we all sent menstrual products to a couple of years ago when he was trying to defund women's health. He is the epitome of a terrifying Christian conservative. He's a born-again evangelical Catholic whose beliefs and policies are actually a textbook edition of the theocracy that this block within the United States would like to provide. And the thing is, you listen to him and he sounds sort of, you know, conservative and... just listen for a second. This is him talking about his values on an interview back when he was still in Congress.
I took to saying I'm a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican in that order, because my Christian faith that I embraced in my 18th year when I was a college freshman and continues forward as we worship in an evangelical church here in the Washington area, and as well as our members of a church in Indiana, is the most important thing in my life. My relationship with the Lord, the way that expresses itself in real ways day in and day out, and the way I conduct myself at home and at work is really my what I'd like to make my end all. The next most important thing to me is my values, my conservative ideals, my genuine belief that America and our Constitution is an experiment in limited government. I'm not a green eye shades guy. I actually think there are more profound issues even than the actuarial perfection. I think that as government expands, freedom contracts, and that that to ensure the ongoing vitality of the American experiment, on which turns the ongoing vitality of freedom in the world, we've got to be about defending limited government and the traditional moral values upon which it rests. And that's my passion as well. So I say I'm a Christian, a conservative, but I'm also a Republican. And I try in my voting record and even on some of these tough votes where I've broken with my colleagues to reflect those priorities, to live them out. But I'm still proud to be a Republican. I became a Republican because of Ronald Reagan. I was the Youth Democratic Party coordinator in Bartholomew County, Indiana, when I was a teenager. But Ronald Reagan's voice and values convinced me that I belonged in the Republican Party.
That's right. Mike Pence grew up in a Democratic Irish Catholic family in Indiana. He was a Democrat, and then he found a born-again Jesus, a different Jesus, became a Republican.
A different Jesus.
There are a lot of different Jesuses out there, frankly, and some of them are pretty great, and this one doesn't really work for me. No friend of mine. And he has been considered for many, many years to be one of these like circling, maybe he'd be a good presidential candidate. He's the governor of Indiana. Indiana's doing all right in some ways and not so well in others. You know, so he's been on this list. And you listen to him and he's like, well, I'm thoughtful. I'm trying to live my values. You know, I'm trying to be this good guy. He's very, very sort of the classic conservative that you'd want in that the classic religious conservative. But you get into his policies and it really gets hairy.
Just basically scream face emoji just like sums up all of my feelings towards him.
It's like scream face emoji, fire eyes emoji, yes. Right? Some things Mike Pence believes. Cigarettes, maybe they don't cause cancer. That's a liberal conspiracy. Mm. Climate change and global warming, liberal conspiracy.
Does he think it's related to China? Is it a China thing?
It's just kind of fake.
Okay, just
fake. It just doesn't exist.
Gotcha.
Right? The Earth is young. He's a young Earth theory person, right? He believes that gay marriage is terrible, first because gays are terrible, and second because gays persecute Christians and force them to support gays, right? He's okay. He was a big backer in a religious freedoms bill in Indiana, which is this sort of conservative Christian dog whistle for we want to make it illegal for it to be illegal for us to discriminate against gays.
Yes.
Like, so it's basically rolling back equal rights protections on the basis of religious freedoms. Just at every single turn, he makes the step beyond conservative, beyond extra conservative, to just going off into the sea, right? You listen to him talk and it's all, you know, he's one of these, he's like a spiritual warrior Christian, right? He's like, Satan is trying to work against us. Satan is winning. We have to pray and fight. Exactly. You know, and the only hobby I've even been able to find about him is that he likes to ride horses. It's in one interview in 2009 when he was a freshman, when he was on Capitol Hill.
Western style, I think it Western says, right?
Style.
Yeah, Western
yep.
style. He has Not a, that English.
No. Like a man.
Yes.
Like a man. He's actually, one of the quotes that I didn't pull that was a written quote was him saying that, you know, the outside of the horse is good for the inside of a man. It's good to ride horses.
Whoa.
Yeah. He tried to defund Planned Parenthood in Indiana, including ones that didn't perform abortions and were just trying to provide health care to try and stop an HIV outbreak in southern Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
He has come out not shockingly, against needle exchanges, right? He is 110% Trump, trying desperately to figure out how to appeal to a group he is not doing very well with, which is the Christian right. Mm-hmm. All of the people who liked Cruz, who maybe liked Rubio, who maybe liked Carson, who do not like Donald Trump because Donald Trump is not a religious man.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
He's like, I like babes and money.
Exactly. He's like kind of socially liberal in these ways that he's now like, vaguing around about, like, gay marriage, you know, his own marriages, abortion, all of these things. And like his faith is sort of the vague opportunistic Christianity that is just like all of his other vague opportunistic positions, right? He's like, you know, very sort of Donald Trump, well, I'm a godly man, I love God, God loves me, the Bible's the greatest book ever written, it's a great book, I quote that
have
book.
I read it? Never.
Have I read it?
Is it fabulous? Yes. Is
exactly.
It extraordinary?
It's fabulous. It's extraordinary. My favorite Bible verse, the one's about winning, like, we're gonna win. You know, he's that guy. And this sort of conservative, and it's so easy to lump all the different conservatives together, but actually these people are struggling because it's sort of where the left is with Hillary Clinton, where they're saying, I don't know, I just can't see myself supporting this person, but what do we have on the other side? Hillary Clinton, who, as you may remember from the RNC, is friends with Lucifer, right? So they don't like her, but they don't really like him, but they don't like her more. Right. And so Mike Pence is trying, and it will be so interesting to see at this debate if he's able for 1 minute to actually grab the spotlight away from Donald Trump. Like, Donald Trump is the candidate who's like, ah, wah, 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 wah. And Mike Pence is like out there in the Midwest eating hot dogs and praying
mm-hmm.
with people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he is not running for governor again. He had to step back from his reelection campaign.
Gotcha.
The only other thing I find is his wife, who was a teacher, had to suspend her towel charm business.
Oh, please tell us more about the towel charm business.
Exactly.
I absolutely love it.
She had a side business making towel charms.
Hey, don't call it a side business. It's her business.
Well, she talks about it as a side business. Her business
okay.
is her children.
Okay, gotcha.
And I say that like that's her priority, right? That's mm-hmm. like she is of a model where she's a teacher, but she's a mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this way, that's like sort of what it is to be a godly woman for this group of godly, this vision of godliness involves like you're a mom first and a teacher. And then maybe you have your side hustle because God is expensive. And
right.
like there's some smart ass evangelical Christians on the hustle coming up with products to sell. And I'm the most surprising thing about her towel charm business is how few of them are religious. Towel charms.
What
is a towel charm?
I didn't even know about this until yesterday.
So you know what a wine charm is, Cassie?
Sure do. You stick it in your wine glass to say, hey, that's my wine glass. Don't drink out of it.
Exactly. If you're like classy and you're at a classy party. Is that a classy thing or is that not a classy thing?
I don't think a wine charm is classy.
This is like shrimp cocktail. It's not actually classy.
Right.
But it sounds classy. A towel charm is a charm you stick on your towel to say, hey, that's my towel. In case your towel looks like a lot of other towels, or maybe you have multiple children whose towels were all from the same towel set, and so they might mix their towels up.
Now, is this like a beach issue or a pool issue or a home issue?
Based on the photography available on the website, it seems like it's a pool issue more than a beach issue.
Yeah.
But
it's not a waterfront place, Indiana. I mean, I'm sure they have lakes, but they're not like on a coast.
Yeah, exactly. You're on some great lakes, and there's some great lakes nearby for sure, but it's not the same sort of seashore life that we live here.
Right.
But yeah, towels, so like your kids, like the pool, the pictures of this are all very like, the kids are at the pool and they're like in their cute swim team outfits. And then they each have their towels and they each have their towel charms. So everyone knows, like, you know, like Sharon and Bailey's, no one needs to kill Sharon, but like Bailey and like Sage's
Madison and
Madison's towels don't get all mixed up. And they're like in their cute little like hopeful ponytails for the future. Right. And so like, that's all there really is about Mike Pence. There's not, he's a godly man who's like touring the country eating hot dogs. And in the meantime, in Indiana, has done his best to enshrine every wrongheaded Christian value that I could possibly list. We could just play this game on and on and on.
I can say one good thing about him.
Oh, what?
He never uses someone else's towel.
That's
ba-dum-ching.
Ba-dum-ching. That is the truth.
We are going to take a little musical break and be back with the weather. We are going to listen to another song from, if Mike Pence is at the epitome of just everything that is awful, Solange is at the epitome of everything that is wonderful and beautiful in this world.
Someone on Facebook put, like, I just imagine Solange, like, gently with Beyonce over many months being like, yo, Beyonce, like, have you, you know, like, bae, have you checked out, like, what's happening with Black Lives Matter? Like, it's kind of great. Like, the Solange is Beyonce's radicalizing element.
It's possible. I don't know. I think that Beyonce has really is like a political force on her own.
In oh, she case, is. For yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. No judgment on Beyonce. Let yeah. it be clear.
Yes.
She's made it.
She has. So we're going to listen to the song Cranes in the Sky, which is from her album, A Seat at the Table, which dropped on Friday. And this is a song that is about soothing your pain in different ways. Let's listen.
I don't wanna feel those metals.
Oh, Solange.
Beautiful.
Dang.
Beautiful. Cranes in the Sky from her new album, A Seat at the Table. Glorious. God. Beautiful, beautiful.
Ugh, at every turn, that was amazing.
So it's cold now. It's freezing. It's freezing cold outside. Actually, not today.
It's actually like, it's getting there. It's fall, finally.
It's fall. It was cold over the weekend, though, a little bit.
It was.
My girlfriend put on her sweatpants and announced to me that she was not taking them off for 3 months. Oh. Four, probably.
Maybe 3 months only gets you to, like, November, December, January. Like, tell me about February. So Kat, I guess, what you doing?
I think she'll probably keep them on for February, March, and through most of April.
Yeah, I mean, I took the air conditioner out of the window. The official sign it's over. Air conditioner came out and...
This is not fun for me. I don't like this. Everyone's all happy and all like talking about their coats. And I feel like, okay, yeah, it's fun for like 1 minute. And then it's just going to be like utter despair. So
I have some solutions for you.
Do you?
I do.
Rain. Snow. Sun. Ice. Weather fashion helper.
It's fall. It's officially happened, folks. And aside from today and a brief break this Wednesday, this coming week is going to be gray, gray, gray. Cloudy, mostly cloudy, cloudy with sun breaks. Meaning it's time. It's time to make a choice. Are you going for a color story this fall or a monochrome story? Because it's up to you. Gray pants, black shoes, black shirt, black tie, white hair bow. It's acceptable. Yellow pants, pink shirt, blue eyebrows, blue shoelaces. It's also acceptable, but it's time to pick your fall fashion strategy. With temperatures hovering around 60, going down into the 50s, you're going to have time for a coat. It's going to be time for a coat. You're going to have time for some layers. It's going to be time for some layers. This is the moment where you get to decide, what do you want to bring in to yourself this fall? Are you looking for the sleek elegance of a monochromatic look? Are you looking for the loud, raucous nature of all flower prints? Who do you want to be? What do you want to project? This is the week to take a stand. I can't wait to see what you decide.
Well, it bears answering. What have you decided?
I have decided that I hate all of my clothing and I'm going to become a nudist and tie sheets around my body.
Cute.
That's not really gonna happen.
That's so cute.
I know. I'm struggling. I need a new haircut. I need new clothing. I need new shoes. I need new sneakers. Everything is worn. Everything is breaking. I hate it all.
I
what
know.
About you?
Well, I went to the shopping store this weekend, and I got the clothing.
Which shopping store?
I went to Forever 21, but
correct.
The discount for Forever 21 in downtown Brooklyn, which
yes.
Many people don't even know about.
No, I don't.
Yeah, it's on Fulton. It's great. I mean, you know, it's... It's a factory slave labor.
I mean, find which clothes aren't, please advise.
Clothes. And I got a bunch of, I got all black and one pink item. And
mm-hmm.
And I put all my clothes, I rearranged my closet last night and I put only black, white, and pink things together. And I was feeling really good. And then I put all my patterns aside and I was like, I don't want to wear those right now. So I guess I've
made. You made a choice.
I made the choice. I made it last night. That's amazing. I didn't even know we were gonna talk about this. Yeah. So I'm going to do black, pink, and white.
That's
actually
amazing.
Inspired somewhat by the Rihanna fashion line, which we did not talk about on the
oh,
show, but
she
showed a line at Fashion Week and it had just the most delightful colored pink tones in it that I was just thrilled by.
That's amazing. I need to find my inspiration. I'm struggling. I struggle.
You do.
And I struggle I struggle every fall and then I'm dissatisfied with the masculine options I can find. I don't want to I don't live a collar and tie life, but what do I do?
I really recommend. So I, a little bit of personal information. I run I co-run a Friday night fashion club for teens at my job. And these teens are just like so fashion knowledgeable that I'm like finding myself to be just like so excited about things. So, you know, if you want to stop by, you can.
Maybe I will.
Maybe you should.
That's our show. Up next is Amy Goodman stealing all our headlines.
Amy.
Have a good week, everyone.
Goodbye, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Next time.